Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Saturday night. Program 278 in the series. This is April 28th, 2018. And to my right is the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf, who's dressed exactly like I am dressed.
I try.
She wore a black sweater with jeans. Did we call each other?
It's a sweatshirt, but that is so close to a sweater.
Yeah.
It's almost the same thing.
We have, look, in the studio, Curtis Koch. He is producing our show.
I am.
Yeah. So
we are feeling calm and good to have Curtis.
Absolutely.
Trust you with our life.
We have three classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 a.m. We're going to listen to a very interesting show to start things off. It's the CBS Radio Workshop. Then it's Duffy's Tavern, Good Comedy, and then a Good Detective Adventure on Nick Carter, Master Detective. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride, which means we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride Crack the Quote. What is the movie, Lisa?
The movie is To Kill a Mockingbird.
All right, Gregory Peck.
Classic. And the prize is two tickets to see Company, which is Stephen Sondheim musical, which is playing at the Mercury Theater in their new Venus Cabaret stage.
Wow.
It is great. I saw it last week.
Wow.
And I loved it. So
yeah.
Call in. Which
I'm
caller,
from Venus and you're from Uranus.
That's exactly. I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Which caller would you want?
We'll take the fourth caller, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Fourth caller will play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Rosemary. How are you? We have Rosemary on the phone?
Yes, you do.
Oh, good. Hi.
How are you, Lisa?
I'm great.
Hi.
It's great to hear from you. Where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hi. Did we lose you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're back. We're glad you're with us. We're ready to play the game.
Where are you calling from, Rose?
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right.
In the Lakeview area.
All right. Not too far from
Very
here.
Very good.
All right. We're going to play. The movie is To Kill a Mockingbird. I'll give you three quotes. You tell me what you think is the right one, okay?
Okay.
All right. Number one, I'll beat you up right now if you want me to. Number two, this is a court of law, young man. Number three, you have testified that he choked you and he beat you.
I think it's number two.
This is a court of law, young man. Carl, what's your guess?
As sweet as Rosemary is, I'm going to say three.
Three. You have testified that he choked you and he beat you?
Yeah.
Okay, only Curtis knows for sure. Let's hear it.
You have testified that he choked you.
Carl.
And he beat you.
Carl is beaming, but
I'm batting
Rose.
A thousand. Oh, I'm batting a thousand.
He's one out of one here tonight, but Rosemary is the winner. Rosemary, I am so excited to give you two tickets to see Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. It's playing right now through June 3rd at the Mercury Theater Chicago. They have a new Venus Cabaret stage. It's a party. You are invited. It's a very intimate space. It's about 50 people, and so you're really close up to the stage, and these actors are truly amazing group of young actors. So check it out at Mercury Theater.
It's a block and a half away from my
home. Oh, I am so happy. You walk right over. Check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Enjoy the show. Let me know what you think. It is fantastic.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, Rosemary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening.
You too.
Love your show.
Aw, thank you. All right, Lisa, we want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text in line. It is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. I always like to ask this question of Lisa. Lisa, did you get a nap today?
I did not.
Me neither. So, folks, I really need you to text in a lot tonight. We don't want her...
Yeah, it keeps me very busy during the shows.
You,
otherwise, I have nothing
listen,
to do.
Either get that uvula removed.
Right.
So you're not snoring so loudly.
I hear you.
Or take more naps. One
right.
of the other. Okay?
Right, because I've got nothing to do, but I do love texting our listeners.
All right.
I'll
well, we're going to start things off with a CBS Radio Workshop. Now, this was an anthology drama series. Came to radio very late. Came in 1956. So that was like already the golden age of radio
yeah.
was on its way out. Television had taken over.
Already started.
Yeah,
then.
But this was it came very late. It was billed as radio's distinguished series to man's imagination. And I got to tell you, Lisa, they had some of the most interesting experimental dramas on this program. I think because CBS was like, you know what? Nobody's listening anyway. So let's do some crazy stuff. Right? Experiment. But they did use great writers like Robert A. Heinlein, Sinclair Lewis, Edgar Allan Poe, Frederick Pohl, James Thurber, Mark Twain. They took these stories and dramatized them, and they used L.A.'s best actors, William Conrad, Elliot Lewis, Paul Frees, Hans Conried, many, many more. The show we're about to hear, in my opinion, and I've heard a lot of these episodes, in my opinion, one of the best of the series. It's called The Enormous Radio. And it's all about a newly purchased radio that can pick up voices from neighboring apartments in an apartment complex.
Ooh, now that's exciting, actually.
Very cool. And there's like the best actors in all of radio in there, including William Conrad and Virginia Gregg, Hans Conried, Paula Winslow. I think our listeners are really going to like this.
It sounds voyeuristic.
So, yeah, so listen very closely. Let's go back to May 11th, 1956. William Conrad stars along with a bunch of other great actors in The Enormous Radio, Part 1 of the CBS Radio Workshop.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, The Enormous Radio, based on John Cheever's extraordinary short story, which originally appeared in the pages of The New Yorker magazine.
Irene, don't you want to hear The Workshop? It's a pretty good show.
Oh, I feel like music, don't you? It's the Schubert for Alum, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, leave it on. A little louder, though, will you?
Jem and Irene Westcott were the kind of people who seemed to strike that satisfactory average of income, endeavor, and respectability that is reached by the statistical reports and college alumni bulletins. They differed from their friends, their classmates, and their neighbors only in an interest they shared in serious music. They went to a great many concerts, although they seldom mentioned this to anyone, and they spent a good deal of time listening to music on the radio. Now, their radio was an old instrument, sensitive, unpredictable, and beyond repair. And when it faltered, Jim would strike at the side of the cabinet with his hand. Well, this sometimes helped. But one Sunday afternoon...
Darling,
hmm?
The radio.
Hmm? Oh, Lord. No, this time it's finished.
Bang it again.
Oh, it's finished. It's just burned out.
Might not be. How do you know? Try reversing the plug or something.
But it won't do any good. It's a miracle it lasted this long.
Well, let me try.
That's not going to do any good, not...
The woman's touch.
All right. Why don't you sit down? It'll... Yeah,
See, there it goes.
It's so aggravating. And of course it had to happen while they were playing the Schubert.
Take it easy, huh?
Well, it makes me mad. We knew this was going to happen. We should have done something.
I told you what the repairman said, honey. It had cost almost as much to fix it as to buy a new one.
Darling, couldn't we get a new one?
I don't know. We agreed to get along with this until we could get a good hi-fi with some FM.
Please. It's not going to be much fun without music.
All right. All right, dear. I'll look around tomorrow, see what I can find.
The next day, on Monday, when he came home from work, he told her that he'd got one. He refused to describe it and said that it would be a surprise for her when it came. The radio was delivered the following afternoon. And with the assistance of her maid and the handyman, Irene,
here,
uncrated
you
it.
You hold this, Emma.
Oh, yes,
and
ma'am.
Brought it into the living room.
Take your stuff in the kitchen later.
Oh, this sure is a heavy
one. Very pretty cabinet.
Oh, ma'am, look at all the dials on it. I never could get the hang of that.
It shouldn't be too difficult, I suppose. Volume, treble, boost, bass boost, tuning, shortwave, band 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, well, this must be the switch to turn it on. Yes. Plug it in now, will you, Emma?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
All right. Probably takes a minute to warm up.
Oh, my. My, it is loud, isn't it, ma'am? Much louder than the old one.
Yes. It'll take a little getting used to, tuning it in.
My, you certainly do know how to find good music, I'll say.
It is nice. Well, you better see about getting supper now.
Yes, ma'am.
She sat down to listen, feeling once again complete. The music came through clearly. The new instrument had a much purer tone, she thought, than the old one. Well, she decided that tone was most important, and she could conceal the ugly gumwood cabinet behind the sofa. But as soon as she'd made her peace with the radio, the interference began.
Oh, dear. And they call this hi-fi.
Nothing she did with the switches and dials dimmed the interference. As she sat down again, disappointed and bewildered, and tried to trace the flight of the melody. The elevator shaft in her building ran beside the living room wall. And it was the noise of the elevator that gave her a clue to the character of the static. The rattling of the elevator cables were reproduced in her loudspeaker. And realizing that the radio was sensitive to electrical currents of all sorts, she began to discern through the Mozart the various other sounds. By listening more carefully, she was able to distinguish doorbells, elevator bells, electric razors, and whirring mixers picked up from the apartments that surrounded her. The powerful and ugly instrument, with its mistaken sensitivity to discord, was more than she could hope to master, so she turned the thing off.
Hello?
Hello, Irene. Did it get there?
Oh, the radio. Yes, dear.
How do you like it?
Well, it's fine, but...
But what?
Well, there's all kinds of sounds, noises coming through.
What do you mean? Like static?
Well, yes, but more like real noises.
Hmm?
I think it's picking up all the electric things in the building. Bells, vacuums, telephones.
Well, you better not fool with it until I get home. It probably needs a ground or something.
All right. I think it's wonderful, dear. Much nicer than the old one. When it's clear, the music sounds beautiful.
Oh, good. Well, I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
When Jim Westcott came home that night, he went to the radio confidently, worked the controls.
Hello, Tom. Who is it? Hello.
The low pressure area, which developed over the southwest yesterday, is moving rapidly toward the north and east. Lower temperatures following.
What the devil?
That's what I was telling you.
The city's current reading is 58. Kansas City, 54.
He fiddled with the knobs.
Chicago, 54. Detroit, 55.
Couldn't get rid of the noise.
Born raining. Toledo, 56.
And he turned the radio off.
What the heck with it, huh? I'll call the fellow who sold it to me in the morning. He's going to hear something from me.
The following day, Irene had a luncheon date and did some shopping during the afternoon. It was late when she returned home, and she didn't have a chance to turn on the radio, although the maid informed her that a man had come and fixed it. She busied herself with the children, seeing to their baths and bedtime. When Jim came home that night, he was tired and took a shower and changed his clothes, and then he joined Irene in the living room. He had just turned on the radio when the maid announced dinner, so he left it on, and he and Irene went to the table.
I saw the sweetest dress this afternoon. Of course, I didn't buy
it, but
it's
just as well. I mean, we better go slow for a bit.
Hard day, dear?
Yeah, and a rotten day.
Music does sound nice, doesn't it?
Very nice.
For heaven's sake, Kathy, do you always have to play the piano when I get home?
Well, it's the only chance I have. I'm at the office all day.
So am I. I wish you'd...
Did you hear that?
No, it's probably a play.
I don't think it is a play.
What's the matter? Where are you going?
I want to see what that was.
Well, try another station.
This country.
Hey, have you seen my garters?
Button me up.
I said, have you seen my garters?
Just button me up and I'll find your garters.
All right, all right.
Is that a radio show?
I don't know.
Here, let me see.
I wish you wouldn't leave apple cores in the ashtray. I hate the smell.
The devil is this?
On the coast of Coromandel, where the early pumpkins blow, in the middle of the woods lived the Yongi Bongi Bo. Two old chairs and half a candle, one old jug without a handle.
But that's these the Sweeney's nurse.
What?
Turn that goods. Thing off. Maybe they can hear us. That was Miss Armstrong, the Sweeney's nurse. She must be reading to the little girl. They live in 17B. I've talked to her in the park. I know her voice. We must be getting other people's apartments.
That's impossible.
Well, that was Sweeney's nurse. I know her voice. I know it very well.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Lady Jingly, sitting where the pumpkins blow.
Maybe they can hear us.
Be my wife. I'm tired of living singly on this
coast
so wild and singly.
Hello?
I'm a weary of my life. If you come and be my wife,
I guess she can't hear us. Try something else.
Eat some more sandwiches.
Oh, sure, I'd love some.
Those must be the Hutchinsons in 15B. I knew they were giving a party this afternoon. I saw her in the liquor store.
Oh.
Isn't this divine? Try something else.
All right, wait a minute.
See if you
wait
can get
minute.
Those people in 18C.
You can listen in, Lisa.
I like that.
To other people's apartments.
Don't we all wish we could just be a fly in the wall sometimes?
But what's the price for the free admission?
You're going to find out, David Jennings. All right, we're listening to the CBS Radio Workshop, The Enormous Radio, starring William Conrad and a host of other great stars from 1956. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
It is allergy season, and Dr. Kevin Most has a scoop on what you can
Achoo!
Do. Exactly, on what you can do to minimize your symptoms. Tune in to the Steve Cochran Show Monday at 6:40 a.m.
Achoo!
Are you done sneezing on me?
Yeah, much better now.
Wear a mask or something. Would you?
You want me to wear a mask so you don't have to look at my face.
No, I want you to wear a mask so you don't steal all my strawberries.
Yeah,
here.
She brought some strawberries, folks. And they're good.
And you put two in every fork.
They are really good. Have a big mouth. That's
I know. Why. I'm very well aware of that.
All right, we're listening to The Enormous Radio on the CBS Radio Workshop. Let's get back to it right now.
Trump.
Pass.
Three, no Trump.
Double.
And look at George in the grass skirt.
The Westcotts overheard that evening a monologue on salmon fishing in Canada, a bridge game, running comments on home movies, and a bitter family quarrel about an overdraft at the bank. They turned off the radio at midnight, went to bed, weak with laughter. Sometime in the night, their son began to call for a glass of water, and Irene got one and took it into his room. It was very early. From his window, all the lights in the neighborhood were extinguished. He went into the living room and turned on the radio.
Are you all right, darling?
Yes. I'm all right, I guess. But you know, Charlie, I don't feel like myself anymore. Sometimes there are only about 15 or 20 minutes in the week when I feel like myself. I don't like to go to another doctor. The doctor bills are so awful already, but I just don't feel like myself, Charlie. I just never feel like myself.
Oh, dear. Oh, sad. Oh, terribly sad.
The following morning, after her children and husband had been carried away in the elevator, she went into the living room and tried the radio again.
You are going to school this morning, my girl, and that's all there is to it. Look, we paid $800 to get you into that school, and you'll go if it kills you.
If you think he's so hot, why don't you just tell
us? Oh, sure. I can just see you. You'd like that, wouldn't you? That's what you're waiting for. You'd like me to do something like that, the kind of thing you've been doing.
Huh?
You think I don't know? You think I don't smell that perfume on you when you get home from work? Work? You think I haven't seen the lipstick on your handkerchief?
That's
you
the Johnsons.
You look in my pockets again, I'll break your arm. Thanks for a lousy breakfast and indigestion. I may see you tonight and I may not.
Go on. Get out. Go on. Stay out all night.
Maybe I will.
Irene shifted the control and invaded the privacy of several breakfast tables. She overheard demonstrations of indigestion, love, abysmal vanity, faith, and despair. Her life was nearly as simple and sheltered as it appeared to be, and the forthright and sometimes brutal language that came from this loudspeaker the morning there astonished and troubled her. She continued to listen until her maid came in, and then she turned the radio off quickly, since this insight, she realized, was a furtive one. She had a luncheon date with a friend that day and didn't get home until after 2:30. For some reason, she felt strangely disturbed.
Hello.
Oh, hello, dear. I expected Miss Cummings.
No, she's out getting me some coffee, honey.
My, what an efficient secretary.
Something wrong?
No. You won't forget we're going out for dinner tonight.
No, I won't forget. Look, dear, I'm rather busy.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear.
No, that's all right.
Oh, the funniest thing.
What?
When I went out for lunch, there were some people in the apartment elevator. It was the funniest thing. I kept
honey,
wondering...
Honey, will you tell me about it later? I haven't got time now. I'll see you about 7.
Now, don't give the best scotch to anyone who hasn't white hair. And see if you can get rid of that liver paste before you pass those hot things.
As the afternoon waned, the conversations increased in intensity. On her radio, she could hear the arrival of cocktail guests, the return of children and businessmen from their schools and offices. The voices swirled around her.
I found a good-sized diamond on the bathroom floor this morning. What? It must have fallen out of that bracelet Mrs. Dunson was wearing last night.
Monsieur.
Here it is.
We'll sell it. Take it down to the jeweler on Madison Avenue and sell it. Well, Mrs. Dunson won't know the difference, and we could use a couple of $100 outside.
No! How horrible!
Oh,
oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clemens. Halfpence and farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's. When will you pay me, say the bells at Earl Bailey. It's not a hat. It's not a hat. It's a love affair. Oh, that's what Walter Farrell said. He said it's not a hat. It's a love affair.
Talk to somebody, honey. Talk to somebody. If she catches you standing here not talking to anyone, she'll take us off her invitation list. And I love these parties.
I hate these things. I think they stink.
The Westcotts were going out for dinner, and when Jim came home, Irene was dressing. She seemed sad and vague. And he brought her a drink. They were dining with friends in the neighborhood, and they walked to where they were going. It was one of those splendid spring evenings that excite memory and desire. And the air that touched their hands and faces felt very soft. A Salvation Army band was on the corner playing.
They're really such nice people, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They have such nice faces. Actually, they're so much nicer than a lot of people we know.
She took a bill out of her purse and walked over and dropped it into the tambourine. There was, in her face when she returned to her husband, a look of radiant melancholy that he was not familiar with. And her conduct at the dinner party seemed strange to him, too. She interrupted her hostess.
I don't agree with you. I think you're absolutely wrong. Completely wrong.
Stared at people across the table from her with an intensity for which she would have punished her children. She waited that night until Jim had fallen asleep and then went into the living room and turned on the radio.
I'm so tired. I'm absolutely dead.
Maybe if we'd get home one night in a week before 1 o'clock, you wouldn't be so tired.
I know, we had to go to...
The next day, she had a slight headache and didn't keep an appointment she had. At 2 o'clock, Jim called her from the office.
Everything all right?
Yes, I suppose so.
Aren't you feeling well?
I've got a bit of a headache.
Oh. What'd you find out about the car?
No, I didn't.
Well, I asked you to be sure to, honey. We won't get it until tomorrow now. Now, will you please call them right away and tell them I've got to have it by tomorrow?
Yes.
Irene, did you hear me?
I said yes.
What's the matter with you?
I've got a headache.
You've been listening to that radio all morning, haven't you? Now, look, fun's fun, but you're running it into the ground, honey. It's not good for you. Now, please, keep the thing off, will you?
All right.
You promise?
All right.
Jim came home at about 6 that night. Emma, the maid, let him in, and he had taken off his hat and was taking off his coat when Irene ran into the hall.
Go up to 16C, Jim.
What?
Don't take off your coat. Go up to 16C. Mr. Osborne's beating his wife. They've been quarreling since 4 o'clock, and now he's hitting her. Go up there and stop it.
Cut it out. Stop it. You don't have to listen to this sort of thing, you know. It's indecent. It's like looking in windows. You know you don't have to listen to this sort of thing. You can just turn it off.
Horrible. It's so dreadful. I've been listening all
day.
Honey,
why do you listen to it? Why? I bought the filthy thing to give you some pleasure. I paid a lot for it. I thought it might make you happy. I wanted to make you happy.
No. Don't quarrel with me, please. Please. All the others have been quarreling all day. Everybody's quarreling. They're all worried about money. Mrs. Hutchinson's mother is dying in Florida, and they don't have enough money to send her to the Mayo Clinic. And Mrs. Melville has heart trouble, and some woman is playing around with the superintendent. It's disgusting. And Mr. Hendricks is going to lose his job. And that girl who plays the Missouri Waltz all the time. And Mr. Osborne beating Mrs. Osborne.
Irene, listen to me. Why do you have to turn it on? Why do you have to listen to that stuff? It makes you so miserable.
No, don't. No, life is too terrible. It's too sordid and too awful. But we've never been like that, have we, darling? Have we? I mean, we've always been good and decent and loving, haven't we? And we have two children. Beautiful children. Our lives aren't sordid, are they, darling? Are they? We're happy, aren't we? We are happy.
Of course we're happy, darling, of course. Now, look, I'll have the fool radio fixed or taken away tomorrow. Come on. It's all right, darling. It's all right.
You love me, don't you? And we're not hypercritical or worried about money or dishonest, are we?
No.
A man came in the morning and fixed the radio. And Irene was happy to hear a recording of the Beethoven Ninth, including Schiller's Ode to Joy. She kept the radio on all day, and nothing untoward came from the speaker. Debussy's La Mer was being played when Jim came home and they went into dinner. His face was pale, she thought.
I paid the bill for the radio today. It cost $400. I just hope you get some enjoyment out of it.
I'm sure I will, darling.
Well, $400 is a good deal more than I can afford. But I wanted to get something you'd enjoy. It's the last extravagance we'll be able to indulge ourselves in this year.
All right, dear. Of course. I understand.
Maureen, by the way, I noticed you hadn't paid your clothing bills yet. I saw them on your dressing table.
Oh? I suppose I must have forgotten.
Well, why did you tell me you'd paid them? Why did you lie to me?
Oh, I just didn't want to worry you, Jim. I'll be able to pay my bills out of this month's allowance. There were slip covers last month and that party we had to give.
Well, you just got to learn to handle the money I give you a little more intelligently, Irene.
Yes, darling, I will. I really will.
You just got to understand that we won't have as much money this year as we had last, eh? I had a very sobering talk with Mitchell today. No one's buying anything. We're spending all our time promoting new issues, and you know how long that takes. I'm not getting any younger, you know. I'm 37, and I haven't done as well as I hoped I'd do. I don't suppose things will get any better.
Yes, dear.
We just got to start cutting down. Start thinking of the children. I'm perfectly frank with you, I worry about money a great deal. I'm not at all sure of the future. No one is. I've worked very hard to give you and the children a comfortable life, and I don't like to see all that energy wasted in fur coats, radios, and slipcovers.
Please, Jim, please, they'll hear us.
Who'll hear us? Emma can't hear us.
The radio.
Radio. I'm sick of it. I'm sick to death of you. That radio can't hear us. Nobody can hear us. And what if they can hear us? Who cares? Why are you so holier than thou all of a sudden? What's turned you overnight into a nice girl? You stole your mother's jewelry before they probated her will. You never gave your sister a cent of that money that was intended for her. Not even when she needed it.
Irene stood for a minute before the hideous radio. This graced and sickened. But she held her hand on the switch before she extinguished the music, hoping that the instrument might speak to her kindly, that she might hear the Sweeney's nurse. And as she turned the dial, the voice on the radio was suave and noncommittal.
Buffalo. A fire in a hospital near Buffalo for the care of blind children was put out early this morning. There were several injuries, but no fatalities. And that's the news. The temperature downtown is 64. Humidity, 90. And now an interlude of music. CBS Radio Workshop has presented The Enormous Radio by John Cheever, produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. The script was adapted for radio by Mr. Ellis. The cast included William Conrad, Virginia Gregg, Stacey Harris, Eve McVeigh, Hans Conried, Charlotte Lawrence, Joseph Kearns, Paula Winslow, Herb Butterfield, Helen Klebe, George Walsh, and Irene Tedrow. Special effects were by Robert Chadwick, Bill James, and Clark Casey.
There you have it. The enormous radio with William Conrad and a host of other great actors on the CBS Radio Workshop, May 11th, 1956, as heard on CBS. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. I want a radio like that, enormous radio.
I want an enormous radio.
I want to be able to listen in on other people down the block from me. What's going on over there?
Well, like David says, at what price?
Yes.
Right? She was pretty messed up there.
Yeah, it was a crazy episode.
That's a good one, Carl.
It really was. A very interesting show. The entire series of the CBS Radio Workshop, they always did very interesting programming, but this one was one of my favorites.
It's a good one.
I hope our listeners liked it. Let us know. Text us
in.
I
picked a good one for
312-981-7200. Love to know what you thought of that last radio show. Well, in our next hour, we're going to listen to my brother Vince's favorite comedy show, Duffy's Tavern. It's one of my favorites, too. It's one of the best shows of all time. And, you know, the interesting thing about Duffy's Tavern is that
I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
That the show Cheers was based on Duffy's Tavern.
Yeah, I mean, there's
it's
so many similarities.
In the same,
yeah,
situation in the bar, and some of the characters are even pretty similar. So, like you say, there are no new ideas.
Well, the head writer of Duffy's Tavern, his son created Cheers.
Right, so it's not a coinkydink,
as you would say. Abe Burroughs' son, James Burroughs, created Cheers. So probably had a little bit to do with his dad's former radio show.
Right.
And then in our third hour, one of the best detective shows of all time. It was on for 20-plus years. Nick Carter, Master Detective Lon Clark, starring as Nick Carter. So a lot of great stuff coming your way. Make sure you check out our website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com. When you go there, you'll see our surprise boxes, a good pop-up for that. But when you go to our website, you will see a big, giant banner that has our free app. We have an app just for you folks. It's absolutely free. You can click on the banner. It'll take you to either the Apple Store or the Google Store, directly right to the app, and you just download it. Works like a charm, and there are 10 free classic radio shows. So, Curtis, before the end of the day,
Curtis,
I want you to...
Curtis?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I said Curtis.
No. I'm right here.
What did I say?
You said Chris.
No, I did not. I said Curtis.
It happens.
I said
just let it
Curtis.
Curtis is so nice.
I would like you to play back that audio, please.
I would like to hear it.
Okay, I'm going to prove Lisa
Can you do
wrong.
That?
I'll do a little bit of digging.
Yeah, I want
I
you
heard
to
Chris.
I want you to play back that audio.
I do, too.
Because I want you to prove that I am right. And Lisa is wrong.
What percent when we argue do you think
what do you want
that
to bet
I
me?
Am right and
what do you
are
want to bet
right?
me?
I heard Chris.
No, I bet.
How about this?
Oh, you're wrong.
What did you hear?
To be honest, I thought I heard Curtis.
Yes, I did say Curtis.
Completely honest, but I hear
that's because I did say it.
Lisa, the thing is, I hear things. You know,
I know
it happens. It's late at night. You know, I'm going to be here.
You have a lot of voices in your head.
Well, yeah, but I think my mind's just going crazy because I'm going to be here for Dave Plyer, right after you guys. And I've been here since the Sox game earlier.
By the time you get to Dave, you won't even know what's going on.
Yeah, but
he'll blame it all on us.
By the time I get to Dave, I'm just going to be falling asleep back here.
We will not let you.
All right.
Well, I would like you to.
Anyways,
when we go to news here, I'd like you to just grab that audio clip, play it on the air for all our listeners. And for Lisa. But what I was going to say, Curtis.
Two people just texted in and said that they heard you say Chris.
Wrong.
Now,
those are your
fans.
One,
two, three, four. Four people texted and said Chris.
Carl getting called out by the text line.
Wait a second. Because we got to go to news here. I said Curtis.
I want to hear it.
He is going to play it.
Okay.
When we come back from the news,
we're
going to hear it. Now, Curtis.
Yes.
I do want you to download the app.
Okay.
And I want you to, a little later, I would like you to tell our listeners what you think of the app. How smooth it runs.
Wait, Carl's
or if there's any problems
tonight,
with it.
Am I going to get paid for this?
Yeah. He owes you big time.
The answer is no.
He's bossy.
The answer is no. But you're going to get some on-air time. So there you go.
Just, you know, everybody's going on and on about
you
said Chris.
You know,
listen, okay.
Proof is in the pudding.
The fact that our listeners have my back in, you know, defending that my name is not Chris.
I think defending me, actually.
I think that's enough airtime. I need to be recognized.
No,
for this.
No,
listen
no.
to me. Proof is in the pudding.
All right, let's do this.
We are going to play it
All right.
in just a few minutes. But okay. right now we're going to play news because David Jennings is up there waiting patiently for me to throw the signal to him.
Hi, David.
This is the way it works in the radio business.
Yeah.
And there is a sponsor, though, so I've got to... is there? No, I don't see a sponsor. Was there a sponsor? Because I don't have a sponsor.
There should be.
No, I don't have one.
All right.
But there is a legal ID, so I'm going to say that right now. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, there seems to be some debate.
We're arguing like we always do. Here's the thing.
I said Curtis.
I heard Chris, and we're going to make a bet because okay. I do want to say that I had the best texter. Some people were texting in what they thought they heard. Mostly, I'd say 90% heard Chris. But the best text we got was
couldn't
everything.
Have. They couldn't have heard Chris.
Everything works best when you agree with Lisa. I love that text. You are so right.
Listen, I normally agree with you because normally you're right.
I am normal,
but you're
and
not
I'm always right
this time.
And we're going to bet on this.
All right. Well,
If I win, then you have to invite me over for dinner. And okay. if I win, I'll invite you over for dinner.
Wait, okay. So if I win, I'm coming over by you.
Yeah.
And you're going to cook.
I might cook. I might order.
All right. And if you win, you coming over to my house.
And I want something delicious.
You and Dan can come over.
I'll just bring the whole family.
No, just.
I'll even bring the dog.
All right. Are you guys forgetting this is about my name? Where am I in this?
You're going to play true. The clip.
That's your job.
Are you ready? Let's play it.
Okay.
Free classic radio show. So, Curtis, before the end of the day,
Curtis.
I want you to...
Curtis.
Curtis?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I said what? Curtis.
No. I'm right here.
Play it
what
again.
Did
I say?
You said Chris.
Let's do it again. Curtis? Curtis? Curtis?
Chris.
Curtis?
Chris. Chris. It's Chris.
Curtis.
Chris.
Curtis.
Chris.
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 Chris. Curtis? I hear Curtis.
I hear Chris.
I'm hearing Curtis.
It's Chris.
Curtis?
Chris.
Curtis?
Chris?
Curtis?
Chris
is Chris.
Chris?
Curtis is
it's
Chris.
It's kind of like Chris.
It's
Chris.
A, all right, you know Chris? What? It's like a Chris? Half Curtis.
Chris?
Half Chris.
Chris?
I love how you're looping
Chris?
It.
Oh Chris? God. Hang on. Curtis?
Chris?
Curtis? 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 All right.
Chris?
Okay. I've heard your name enough.
I'm crying.
That's not even my name. So how is it my name?
It's not. I'm crying.
It's Chris's name.
Okay, so listen. Here. Since I'm right and you're right, and you're both right, because
no,
it's like in the middle. It's in the middle.
Right.
It's not a. It's not Chris and it's not Curtis. It's in the middle.
We're not both right.
Chris.
There is no
Chris.
Way we could Chris. Be both right on
Chris.
This one.
All right.
We'll call you Carissa.
I'm not wrong.
Curtis?
You're not wrong, Carl. You're never
not.
Wrong.
Listen.
Curtis?
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 I hear an R in there in the middle of it.
Well, there's an R in both names.
All
so.
Right. Well, anyway, we have to play this next
All
radio
right,
show.
Do a little crack
in this hour,
crack.
Duffy's Tavern. You're going to love it. But first, it's time for Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Curtis. No, I'm kidding. The movie is Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia. I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
I haven't either. But
All right. What's the
we'll
number?
See what we can do. 312-981-7200. We're going to take the 10th caller.
And what do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to see Company, which is at the Mercury Theater Cabaret.
10th caller, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
It's time now for
Roger's getting
crack the
rich
quote.
On this thing.
Brought to you
six
by
bucks a
Cat's
week.
Pride. Then why am I still working here?
Roger, I have to talk to you. We don't have time right now, but I have to do it. We'll talk about that mustache a little bit later.
Why,
right now,
you.
We have Matt on the phone. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Lisa. I love you and Curl.
Oh, thank you so much.
Called me Curl.
I know. I heard it.
My well, hearing, see, my hearing.
Somebody
fine.
Just wrote in. Someone needs a hearing aid, and it's not Lisa. One of my favorite texts of the night. Matt, so glad to have you on the line. We're going to play a little crack the quote. You ready to go?
Let's do it.
I've got faith in you, Matt. Ready?
Let's rip it.
You've got this. Number one, I didn't come here to watch a tribal bloodbath. Number two, you don't go through a bloodbath and then walk away from it. Number three, from my tribe, I take nothing.
Okay. I have to go with a pure guess. Number three.
Number three, from my tribe, I take nothing.
Mm.
Carl.
Number one.
Number one. Do you have a guess, Roger? Just say one, two, or three. Okay, we're moving on. Okay, so we've got a what? Three. We've got a three and a one. Let's hear it, Curtis.
I didn't come here to watch a tribal bloodbath.
Oh my gosh, Carl got it right.
Oh man,
good job.
I'm sorry,
a thousand.
You know what? It's okay. Carl needs a little pat on the back because he's feeling really low about his, you know, error from the last few minutes. So,
Curtis.
He still won't admit it, but that's okay. We're gonna let him roll with it. You have won two tickets to see Company. It is an amazing show. It's playing right now through June 3rd at Mercury Theater Chicago. It's in their new Venus Cabaret stage. You can check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com. I hope you love the show. I loved it.
Way to go, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Nice talking to you, Roger.
Yeah. Roger.
Yeah, because he didn't answer me, so I just went past him.
We'll talk to Roger in a little bit.
Yeah.
But right now, it is time for Duffy's Tavern. This was a comedy that came to radio, Lisa, in 1940, so way, way back. Now, Duffy's Tavern was a flea-infested dive on 3rd and 23rd Streets in New York City, where the elite meet to eat. Ed Gardner, he played Archie the manager, and Duffy, the owner, was never around. He was an absentee owner. He just left Archie to run the whole place. But his daughter, who was a man-hungry person, she was always looking for the next man.
Man-hungry, looking for the next man.
She was looking for the next man. She was always there. She was played by Shirley Booth for a while,
yeah,
Hazel.
Sure.
And then Florence Hallop and Sandra Gould. Regulars in the tavern were Eddie the waiter, Clancy the cop. And there were often guest stars. Now, the main writer, as I said earlier, was Abe Burrows, whose son, created Cheers,
right.
James Burrows. Also, writers were Larry Marks, Larry Gelbart, and Dick Martin of Rowan and Martin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, laughing. In 1949, the entire show moved offshore to Puerto Rico for tax advantages. Ed Gardner, who owned the show, said, hey, I can save a lot of money in taxes if I move this sucker over to Puerto Rico, and that's exactly what he did. So you'd go on the show, and you'd take a boat over to do the show.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's an adventure.
All right, well, we have a great episode for you now from September 7th, 1950. Archie decides to buy an airplane and a helicopter. So let's check this out. Here's part one now of Duffy's Tavern.
Blatt's Beer is on the air. Blatt's Beer is everywhere. Blatt's, Milwaukee's finest beer, brings you transcribed Duffy's Tavern, starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat and drink Blatt's beer. Archie, your manager's speaking. Duffy ain't here.
Oh, hello, Duffy. What's cooking? Nothing. The chef just quit. Huh? No, the hours was okay, and the pay was okay. It was his cooking. He couldn't stand it. What'll our customers do if we don't serve some food? Do the same as when we serve food. They'll eat someplace else. Besides, there's only a few customers in the joint. Well, Herbie the Midget's here. Yeah, just got out of the hospital. Poor little guy. Spent two whole weeks in an oxygen thimble. What was his trouble? He had kidney pebbles. And guess who else is back from the hospital? Salus Levinsky. Will you remember that $100 bill he had tattooed on his chest? He was robbed. No, just a flesh wound. But the joke was on the crooks. The tattoo was counterfeit. Hey, that reminds me, Slippery McGuire's coming down tonight. Huh? You saw because he sold you that vanishing cream for Mrs. Duffy? But Duffy, he didn't guarantee to make it vanish permanent. Okay, so he's a phony. But he's my pal. And I will brook no insults on his behalf. Good day, sir. Eddie.
Yes, sir, Mr. Archie?
Eddie, Slippery McGuire's coming down here tonight, so leave us lay out the welcome mat for him, huh?
We can't do it.
Why not?
He swiped it the last time he was here.
Well, that's all in the past, Eddie. Slippery's gone straight. After all, a leopard can change his spots, can't he?
Well, if he does, it'll be for stripes.
Just a second. I'll have you know that Slippery McGuire and me has been pals ever since our school days.
Pal. Every time that crook comes down here, he swindles you out of your money, and you wind up calling him a dirty, thieving crook.
Well, that's true friendship. The guy must think an awful lot of me to put up with it. You know, Slippery McGuire and me has been pals ever since our school days. We was in PS4 together.
Is that so?
Yeah, he was even treasurer of our graduating class.
You mean you graduated with Slippery?
Miss Duffy, yes. As a matter of fact, there was no graduation that year. The cap and gown money disappeared.
He started kind of young, didn't he?
Yeah, and it was quite a blow to Slippery's father, one of the finest men I've ever met. But it wasn't his fault he couldn't guide Slippery in the right direction.
How come?
He could only see him on visiting days.
A chip off the old cell block, huh?
Yeah.
What about his mother?
Mrs. McGuire, sweet old lady. But she could never learn to refuse Slippery nothing, you know? She spoiled him. He'd come in and say, Mom, I need a $5 bill. She'd go right down the cellar and print one. Yeah, it was like that till the day they... The day they shaved her leg. Yeah, poor Slip has been through plenty.
He's been through you a few times.
Maybe so, but Slip has put his past behind him. He's now in a legitimate business selling war surplus.
Like what?
Oh, pistols, shoes, flashlights, refrigerators.
Refrigerators? War surplus?
The Cold War. You know, Eddie, I'd like to throw some business Slippery's way. You might think I'm going hog wild, but you know what I'm going to buy?
Well, what?
An airplane.
An airplane?
Yep. Hey, you know, I've always wanted to fly.
Well, have you ever considered a kite?
Don't belittle me, Eddie. The Army's always getting rid of second-hand planes, and maybe Slippery can get me one. Imagine me own airplane, a B-29 or a PBX, you know. Flying up there in the clouds. I wonder what it's like.
You an aviator.
What's so funny?
How will you get dizzy when you eat a three-decker sandwich? I bet even I could fly better than you.
You could fly... Miss Duffy, I'm talking about airplanes. Not Halloween night on a broom.
Listen, it so happens that the best pilots in history have been women.
Oh, yeah? Name one.
Cobina Wright.
Cobina Wright, a pilot?
Only the most important of the Wright brothers.
Okay, him. But, but that's just one. Don't try to tell me nothing about aviation. You talk to Archie the Ace. I got air in me veins.
Oh, yeah? Then how come you black out every time you lick an airmail stamp? Besides, what kind of a junky crate is Slippery McGuire going to palm off on you, Archie?
It ain't no junk. It's a genuine Army surplus.
I know. That crook sold Mama a surplus girdle that split the first time she wore it.
Well, don't blame the girdle just because your old lady has too much surplus.
Archie, why do you always have to say such nasty things behind Mama's back?
Well, it offers such a broad field of operations.
You never have a good word for anybody.
On the contrary, I have 5 good words for you. Hit the road.
That's only 3.
The rest ain't hard to figure.
noise like a hoop and roll away.
Say, Mr. Archie.
What is it, Eddie?
Your friend Slippery McGuire is here.
How do you know?
I just reached into my pocket and found myself shaking hands with him.
Please, Eddie, quiet. You'll embarrass him.
Well, Archie, my old pal.
Well, Slippery, my old buddy.
My old schoolmate.
My old sidekick.
The next voice you hear will be that of the old prosecuting attorney.
Eddie, cut out the rejoinders. Well, Slip, it's great to see you. I guess you've been working hard.
Well, not too hard, Arch. I like to take things easy.
Yeah, you do it that, and yet you're a success. How do you do it, Slip? What's your point?
Very simple, Arch. Hear no evil, speak no evil, and keep moving.
Still the same old Slip. You know, I've missed you lately. You must have been away, huh?
Oh, only for 30 days.
What was you doing?
30 days. I mean, I've been putting in some time for the government. You know, working on this surplus army stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've been meaning to ask you, Slip. Ain't it a little late to be selling army surplus?
Arch, come in. This is surplus army surplus.
You're right on a ball, ain't you, Slip?
Oh, sure, Arch. I'm only selling things that people can use in practical everyday life.
Yeah, practical everything.
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, like landing barges, steam shovels, Quonset huts, anchors, ripcords, parachutes.
Just a second. What's practical about a ripcord? What else are you selling?
Well, let's put it this way, Arch. What do you need?
Well, I don't really need nothing, but I was kind of toying with the idea. It's silly to say it.
Go ahead, tell your old pal.
Nah, it's too absurd.
What is it, Arch?
I was thinking of an airplane.
A fighter or a bomber?
Slim, you mean there's a chance?
Look, Arch, how much have you got to spend?
Well, not very much, just $14.
$14? For that, I wouldn't sell a plane to my own brother.
Mm, well, that's all I got.
Brother, you bought yourself a plane. Of course, for that price, it won't be a four-motor job.
No four-motor job?
No.
Well, how about one of them helium copters?
Oh, well, that's a cinch. Just give me the $14, and I'll go get it out of stock before somebody else grabs it.
Okay, here you are, Slip. Good luck and happy landing.
Roger.
Wilco.
Arch, you're taking to it like a duck to water. See you later, you ace you.
So long. So long, Slip. All right. Hey, Eddie.
Yeah?
Eddie, guess what? Slippery's gonna get me one of them helium copters.
A what?
One of them airplanes you can land on a dime.
3-1 that Slippery don't leave you a dime to land it on.
Oh, no. Eddie, I can see myself right now. Me hand froze to the controls, coming in for a graceful crash landing. All of a sudden, I get a flash on the radio. Stand by for ceiling zero.
What?
Oh, hello, Finnegan. Hey, Finnegan, maybe you'd be interested in my new project. Do you like flying?
No, not me.
Why not?
My arms get tired.
What I mean is Slippery McGuire was just here, and he's in the army surplus business.
Just hang out of his mind.
Why?
Who's going to buy a surplus army? Did you buy anything from him?
Yeah, I bought an airplane.
No fooling. What kind?
Well, you know what a helium copter is?
Sure, a guy who cops helium.
Well, not exactly.
No?
It's an airplane.
Oh,
and
oh.
Terrific. It can go straight up in the air and straight down, sideways, frontwards, backwards, you know. It's ambidextrous. In fact, it can do everything that a bird can do.
Oh, yeah?
I'd like to see it either one.
All right, that's the first portion of Duffy's Tavern. More after these words. Curtis?
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Did we ever decide who won this bet, or is it a tie, or what's the deal?
You know, I won, but I would be happy to have you come to my house for a home-cooked
meal. But here's the thing. You know what, Curtis and Roger? I lose either way on this thing, because if I lose, Lisa comes over and I cook her a meal. And if I win, I go over to Lisa's house and I get ptomaine poisoning.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
I mean, right? No, Lisa's a good cook.
Wait, I didn't know you cooked, Carl.
Yeah, I cook.
He does not.
I can cook cereal.
He cooks eggs.
Yeah.
I cook cereal.
Yeah.
Eggs. And
he can burn eggs.
And
actually,
you make scrambled
let me tell
eggs.
You something. I make the world's greatest hard-boiled eggs.
Oh.
Let me tell you how you do this, Roger.
Oh, no.
You take a pot of water to a rolling boil.
Rolling boil?
This rolling
is,
boil.
Don't try this at home, folks.
It has to be a rolling boil.
Okay.
You put the eggs in there.
Yeah.
And you leave them in there for 11 minutes.
Not 12?
Nope, 11.
Not 10?
When you get
minutes.
To 11 minutes,
yeah.
You know, 11 like in Spinal Tap, 11,
okay. Yeah,
remember?
Turn it up to 11.
That's how I remember
mm-hmm.
11.
Right.
Then you take it out,
mm-hmm.
put it in cool water, just like, you know, run some cool water
okay,
in it.
Sure.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
and then just a little bit, not a lot,
mm-hmm.
and then let it sit
mm-hmm.
for about 5 minutes.
Oh, that's
then,
all. Okay.
And then throw them in the refrigerator.
Why are you acting like you're going to do this, Roger?
And you got it, Roger?
Are you actually going to listen?
Called,
here's Lisa, what's going to happen.
Lisa, shh.
It's called humoring
yeah.
him.
Yeah, I
here's
got
what
that.
Happens, Roger.
I do this
when
every
you,
week.
When you make when you crack yes. that thing, it's gonna be, you crack it open,
yeah.
and inside, you know, the...
Is there going to be a surprise?
No, the yolk.
There's a surprise box
a toy
inside.
Surprise inside?
The yolk.
Cracker Jack.
It's going to be like
on me.
Not... It's going to be perfect. It's going to be a little still like a
are
little
you still
bit
talking?
Moist, you know, like moist.
Isn't this old time radio
Carl,
show?
Are you teaching other people how to cook?
I'm telling you how to
cooking
do
cooking with Carl.
Okay.
A new show.
That's
a new show.
It's a new
show.
Carl,
new
I mean, no, Carl. Roger, I have a yeah. quick question for you if okay. we have like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
There is a generous listener who is praying for you because you got into a car accident.
You
she
did?
Wants to know.
Oh,
if,
no, that was. That
it was yeah. it was Bridget, right?
Right. Bridget and the grandkids, yeah.
Are okay. they okay?
They're doing fine. They're doing
everybody's
fine.
Everybody's fine.
Yes.
Can she send you a macrame angel for you and your family?
A macrame angel?
Yeah, they're
oh,
beautiful.
I've never heard of that. Oh, yeah, send okay. it to the station.
Okay. I just wanted to check with
that
you.
That would be
do
wonderful.
You need to read
bless
one of
those?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
We have the most wonderful listeners.
We do.
Really
very
do.
Sweet
fantastic.
And very
I think
generous.
We're going to send them all over to Lisa's house to get ptomaine poison.
Here we go. And if they were at my house, I would order in and have a wonderful meal.
But then I'll be there
you
to
stand
to,
outside.
To pump all their stomachs.
You stand right outside.
Is Chris invited?
No, but Curtis is. It's like, you know what it is? Curtis has two syllables. So you have to, you know.
Syllables.
When you're on the radio, you have to have good
she
diction.
She said it wrong. She said syllables. It's syllables.
Curtis,
we all, everybody knows that. Curtis?
Okay. Be listening to the Steve Cochran Show every Monday between 8:30 and 9 a.m. for your chance to win a family pack of four tickets to see the Chicago White Sox.
All right, very All right. good. Let's get back now to Duffy's Tavern.
You know, I think you got a nice, clean air pocket where your head should be.
Thanks, Arch. I've always considered myself air-minded.
So have I.
But there's only one thing I can't understand.
What's that?
What holds an airplane up in the air?
Well, That's a thing I'll have to explain to you. You know,
yes.
it's one of the basic laws of physics. For instance, you take air, that's H2O. It's much heavier than water. Now, on the other hand, metal is a conductor which conducts the oxygen through the hydrogen, which creates a vacuum which gives us gravity. Which, in turn, naturally pulls the plane up into the air. Is it clear so far?
Dodge, what am I, a dope?
No, but even I had a little trouble with it at first. Well, to go on, you see, we take the stratosphere. Well, it's what it sounds like. It's a fear of high places.
Oh,
stratosphere. Now, in order to fly a straight line, the navigator checks the ground speed against the plane speed, which is, shall we assume, 200 Fahrenheit an hour?
Oh, that sounds like a lot of Fahrenheit.
Well, don't forget, we've come a long way since the days when we had to land a plane by hand. Today we have automatic horsepower, frequency modulation, wing spreads as high as 39 RPMs, automatic tail fins in case the rudder goes on a blink. You know what used to happen in the old days when a rudder went on a blink?
The cow didn't give no milk.
Are you sure this whole conversation ain't been too mechanical for you?
No, not at all. By the way, how's chances for a job on your plane?
Well, I don't know. You think you're right for the air?
As right as I am for the land. Oh, come on now. Give me a break. I could help run your aeroplane. You know me, Uncle Pierre was a famous flyer.
Your Uncle Pierre?
Well, yeah. He was the first guy to try to cross the channel in a balloon. And Arch, guess what he used for ballast?
What?
A case of Blatt's beer. Yeah.
A very tasty ballast.
Yeah.
Did he have any trouble getting a balloon across the channel?
Well, it would have been a perfect crossing, but for one thing.
What was that?
He never got the balloon off the ground.
Why not?
He just couldn't bring himself to throw that ballast overboard.
Well, with a wonderful beer like Blatt, you can hardly blame the guy. But tell me, Finnegan, didn't that balloon ever get up in the air?
Oh, yeah, one time, Arch. My uncle took the Blatt out of the balloon, and it sailed way up in the air. 5,000 feet, 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, 50,000, 40,000.
Back to 40,000?
Air pocket. Yeah. And then up to 50,000 feet, 100,000 feet.
Wait a minute, Finnegan. Nobody could live at 100,000 feet.
The very words my uncle said as he sat there on the ground sipping his blast.
You know, your uncle was a pretty smart guy. Well, Arch, I'm back.
You're back, Slimp. Huh? Tell me, where's me helium?
Hey, look, Arch, we've hit a little snag here. The Army's getting a little sticky about their aeroplanes.
Yeah, huh?
We'll have to clear this deal through Washington.
Who in Washington?
Come here, Arch. Nobody listening?
No.
Can I trust you?
Certainly.
The man I'm talking about is you-know-who.
No, kidding. You know who?
Arch, please don't mention names. Yes, sir, we're taking this right up to the top. Give me the phone.
Here you are, Slim.
Thanks. Hello. Hello, operator. Washington, D.C., please. Hello, Arch. This is Slip.
Oh, my God. Trigby Lee himself.
Hey, look, Dean, I got something for you to clear through you know who. Yeah, a buddy of mine wants to buy a helicopter. Yeah, something in the $10 to $15 bracket. In the bag? Swell, Dean. Well, give my regards to the gang on Pennsylvania Avenue. Oh, by the way, tell Harry I'm still trying to get that Spike Jones record of the Missouri Waltz, will you? So long, Dean. Arch, you're all set. You got yourself an aeroplane.
Oh, gee, thanks. Boy, I can hardly wait till I take me first spin in that helium cockpit.
Your first spin? Just a minute, Arch. You won't be able to take that plane up in the air.
Why not?
No propeller.
What?
Arch, did you ever hear of anybody buying an aeroplane with a propeller for $14?
No.
Well, then let's be reasonable.
Okay, how much more for the propeller?
$1.
I ain't got a dollar. All I got is this lucky piece here, Slip, if you're willing to take it. It's just a Chinese coin.
Chinese coin. What's it worth?
200,000 yen.
What's that in American money?
Half a buck.
Well, let's see what it says here in the catalog. Let's see. Helicopter, $14. Helicopter landing gear, $12. Oh, here it is. Helicopter propeller, 200,000 yen.
Boy, I was right on a button, huh?
This is your lucky day, Arch. And now that I got the final okay from you-know-who, I'll arrange immediate delivery. And here's your official handbook of flying instructions with the personal autograph of Gregory Peck.
The greatest flyer of them all.
Well, so long, Arch. See you in the cockpit.
So long, Slip. Boy, Eddie, you know, this is wonderful. I can see myself already. Whizzing across the continent, transatlantic flights across the Pacific. Can you imagine it? Breakfast in Duffy's Tavern. 2 hours later, lunch at the Miami Biltmore in Chicago. 10 hours later, supper at the Hollywood Bowl.
Well, what held you up between Chicago and Hollywood?
Well, I had to stop. I needed gas.
Not if you had breakfast at Duffy's Tavern.
I don't see the connection.
Well, Arch, we're all set.
Oh, Slip, hey, I forgot to ask you. Where am I going to keep this helium copter?
In a hangar, of course.
A hangar? Where am I going to get a hangar?
Well, don't you know anybody that might sell you one?
Oh. Slip, hey, maybe you could, huh?
Arch, don't you think this is carrying friendship a little too far?
Yeah.
Although it just so happens I do have a few hangers in stock.
You do?
Yeah.
Slip, could you spare me just one?
Well,
you know, just for old time's sake.
Oh, what's the use, Arch? You always get around me. I'm too soft-hearted for my own good. How much dough you got left?
Well, I'm broke. You know, you took me last $14.
Well, that was your money. How about the cash register?
Slip, are you suggesting arson? That's Duffy's money.
So what? An airplane hanger right here on his roof will mean more business to Duffy, won't it?
Hello? Duffy's Tavern. Eddie, the ground crew speaking. Oh, hello, Mr. Duffy. Mr. Archie? You mean Archie the pilot? He's busy. Dipping his wings in the cash register.
By the way, how much is this hanger?
Right? Let's see the catalog here. List price, June, it's $7.
Well, that's okay. I got $10 here.
Well, that's June. Let's see. July, $8. August, $9. Arch, what month is this?
September.
That'll make it even $10. Yes, sir. And to show you what a good fella I am, with the hanger, I'm going to throw in a windsock.
Well, thanks, Slip. I wear a size 12.
I'll make a note of that. Well, Arch, one more meeting with our contact, you know who, and we'll have you up in the air. I'll be right back with the plane.
Here you are, Slip, $2.
Well, okay, Arch, and here's your wings. You know who insisted that I give them to you at the wholesale price.
Gee.
Yeah. Now, Arch, you're all set. I'll be right back with the plane.
Here you are, Slip. 2 1/4.
And here you are, Arch. Your genuine never-leaked parachute. Together with a box of emergency tire patches.
Gee.
Well, Arch, it looks like you're all set. I'll be right back with the plane.
$75, $85, $90. Here it is, Slip.
Okay, Arch, and here's your non-skid white wall retractable landing gear.
Gee. Well, Slip, when do I get me plane?
Yep, just as soon as I get final clearance from you-know-who.
Slip. It's empty.
Empty, huh? Well, never mind that, Hutch. I got great news for you. Congratulations.
For what?
I've just been in conference with the you-know-who and you-know-what.
Who? I mean, what?
Hold on to your hat, kid. He's coming down here tonight to install the hangar in person.
In person? What an honor, huh?
Exactly. And naturally, before he puts in the hangar, he'll want to look over your pilot's license.
Your pilot's license?
Yeah, that's just a formality, of course.
I ain't got no pilot's license.
No pilot's license?
No.
This is a fine time to tell me that.
Is it serious?
Oh, what have we got ourselves into? Do you know what the fine is for operating a plane in a hangar without a license?
How much?
$29.15.
Slip, this is terrible. Can't you fix it with the you-know-who?
Well, now, look, that depends. But where am I going to get $29.15?
Now, let me see. How about the dough I gave you for the plane and the hangar and the parachute and stuff?
How much was that?
$29.15.
By George, that's quick thinking, Arch. I'll take it right over to you-know-who. So long, little pal.
So long, Slip, and thanks a million. Gee, Eddie, I don't know what I'd do without me old pal Slippery.
Say, Archie.
Oh, hello, Officer Clancy. You look kind of tired. What you been doing?
I've been looking for a swindler who's been operating on Third Avenue.
Oh, yeah? What's his name?
You know who.
Three from five is two. Carry the three Z's and add four.
What you doing, Miss Duffy?
I'm subtracting $29.15 from your weekly salary.
What's so tough about that?
Did you ever try to subtract $29.15 from $15? And all because you had that crazy idea about being a great flyer.
And I didn't even come close.
Well, don't feel too bad. After all, you did succeed in making an ace of yourself.
Don't try to cheer me up, Miss Duffy. What really burns me up is that I had me heart set on taking a plane trip to Milwaukee.
Well, maybe you can't go to Milwaukee, but we can bring Milwaukee to you.
How do you mean?
Here, have a black sphere.
Ah, thanks, Miss Duffy. You know, I guess you could travel everywhere and never find a better or more refreshing beer than Flats.
Right you are, Archie. Compare it with any beer at any price. Your own good taste will tell you what folks in Milwaukee have known for almost 100 years, that Blatz, B-L-A-T-Z, Blatz is Milwaukee's finest beer.
I'm from Milwaukee, and I ought to know. It's the same old story wherever you go. This is the tune you will always hear. Blatz is Milwaukee's finest beer.
Be sure to listen next week at the same time to Duffy's Tavern, transcribed over most of these same stations.
The Ronald Colemans will be back next Wednesday on NBC.
It's funny, they called it a helium copter.
I know, I saw it.
You know?
Yeah. That was funny. What did you say? You have to be ambidextrous? What did you say? It was so funny.
Very funny broadcast. Ed Gardner as the star on there. Hazel Shermett as Miss Duffy. And just a great, great cast of characters. Larry Ryan doing the writing on that program. And you heard Ed Gardner as Duffy's Tavern. That was a broadcast from September 7th, 1950. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Hey, Nick Cotta. Yeah. You know what? I'm a bad guy.
Yeah, you're going to hear people like talking like that. I just want to mention one thing before we get to Nick Carter in a minute and before we hit the news. So I came in today and I showed Carl a picture. three pictures.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, Carl, do you know who this
folks,
is?
Listen
Wait.
Up.
And he said, no, do I know him? And I said, you do. I said, here, let me show you another picture. And I showed him two more. So three in total.
Three pictures.
Of one person.
I had no clue.
And I said, Carl, who is this guy? And he said, I don't know. Do I know him? And I said, you sure do.
I actually thought it might be Dean Richards.
He said Dean Richards or Jason Sudeikis, and it was...
Looked like Jason...
Jerry Colonna.
Let me tell you something.
It was Jerry Colonna.
You looked like...
It was Roger Badish with a mustache.
There's a picture there, one of those pictures. You look like Jason Sudeikis in that picture.
Was it the where my head's turned sideways?
It was the one straight on.
It's the one where...
Oh, that was... Yeah, okay.
You look like Jason Sudeikis.
But he did say Dean Richards, which is an odd
I don't know.
Answer.
I was like, is it Dean Richards? I don't know. She made it sound like it was someone at the station. What was going on with that mustache?
I didn't say it was someone at the
station. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
When you wear a mustache that big and you eat food, do you also continue to eat food like the whole week long? Because...
Oh, because there's some caught in the mustache?
Yeah. Does that happen?
No, I clean it out right afterwards.
Oh.
It's kind of like a dessert of my dessert. Huh?
What do you mean you clean it out?
Well, I make sure that there's no food in my mustache.
It's sort of like you carry like a lunch box with you wherever you go.
Well, it's a Hiva bar, so I can, you know.
Yeah. You know, you just put your, you can just stick all your food in there.
You know, I remember my dad used to have that, too.
A handlebar mustache, right?
Yeah, yeah, maybe back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was. I mean, he's older than you are.
And I kept it trained. Notice it was always trained with mustache wax.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that was the thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, you must have spent a lot of money on mustache wax.
You know, it's
wax.
Funny, it's all over Facebook. All over Facebook, it's
sort of
like Brill Cream. It'll devil do you.
It's like it's like wild root cream oil for the
all
hair,
over Facebook,
which is Lisa's favorite
it's
stuff.
It's the post your first headshot day, and I did it, and then I pulled mine down. I got a little shy.
Oh, really?
I did. Aww. Yeah, it's black and white, and I went,
so much.
Yeah, I know. I got a little shy.
Man. But Roger, handsome man.
Oh,
very handsome man.
Good Lord.
Looked a lot like Jason Sudeikis.
Or Dean Richards.
Or Dean Richards.
Pick.
Well,
I like
hey,
Dean.
Dean's
I love
a handsome
Dean.
Man,
you can take whichever you choose.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye. All right, stick around because we have Nick Carter, Master Detective, coming up right after the news. And the news is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. This is Chicago's very own 720. See, I morphed.
You gave up.
I morphed right into from a bad guy into a good guy.
I didn't pick up on that.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. As I said, the news at 1 is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here's Roger Badish.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater. It is 1:08 in the morning. Thank you for staying up late with us. We are here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. playing all your favorite classic radio shows, including Nick Carter, Master Detective. That's what we have for you this hour. You're going to love it. There's going to be a bad guy in here, probably. He's going to sound a lot like this. And then you're going to have Nick Carter, who's going to kind of sound like this. And then Patsy Bowen is going to sound like what, Lisa?
Like this.
Yeah. So you'll hear that in just a few minutes. But first, it's time to play our game, which is called Cats, Prides, Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, man.
I saw this.
I saw this movie.
Well, that's okay. That hasn't seemed to bother you in the last one.
No, I've gotten all right so far.
So
what happens if I get this one right, too?
I don't think there's ever been a night that you've gotten all three correct.
I don't believe so.
So I'm going to make a bet that you won't get this one right. I've got my fingers crossed.
Is it another ptomaine poisoning dinner at your house?
Yes, I will do my best.
Or are you mispronouncing names?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, that
Party
he always
har,
does.
Har.
And I also want to mention at the beginning of the show, we have Curtis all weekend. This is our second weekend with you, so we're so happy to have you with us again. Or I am.
Speak
I can't
for
speak
yourself.
For Carl.
I know
exactly.
Chris is thrilled to be here, too.
Chris, Curtis, you know, whatever your name is over
I
there
said
in the booth.
Chris is getting the podcast also.
I said Chris. Chris.
It's like a tape recorder that when you slow it down.
I'm going to hear it in my nightmares.
Yeah,
all right,
true.
So what do they win?
They're going to win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. Fantastic.
All right. Fifth caller, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Fifth caller will play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back. Another buck.
It's time now
Roger.
Cracking
the
Float.
Raking it in tonight.
Rubbing in the dough.
I mean, I know who to borrow money from. Get a
not
loan
me.
From.
Definitely we're, not me.
Now you, you stepped on the sponsor.
We did.
Stepped on the sponsor.
We,
brought to you
we
by
actually,
Cats oh. Pride.
We actually had dinner together this week, Carl. Well,
yeah.
With the, oh,
and
with
I
the
had
sponsor?
Dinner together. No, well, just us.
Oh.
Lisa, me, my daughter, and her daughter.
Oh,
we
nice.
Did. We had an amazing dinner, actually.
Yeah, where was I?
We went to,
oh,
should
yeah.
I say it?
Yeah.
We went to Tsukasa in Vernon Hills. It's you know, one of those hibachi places
boy.
Where they cook
Tsukasa?
On the table.
Let Mikasa, me tell
you. It's Tsukasa. It's oh. Hibachi.
Oh, okay.
Not soup, but like soup. Hibachi. Oh, it was delicious.
That was some good,
it was good
hibachi.
I know where to go. I can't make it, but I know where to go. Anyhow, we have June on the phone. Hi, June.
Hello. I'm
We're,
so
hi,
excited.
June.
Oh, I'm excited for you. I have a question for you before we start. Were you born in the month of June?
Yes.
Oh, see, I
June
think,
6th. June 6th.
June 6th.
Well, it's not 66, but...
June 6th. Close, it's
June
good.
6th.
June 6th.
96.
It's a, it's
you were born
month.
In 96.
We wish, right? We all wish. Well, Curtis over there.
She called him Chris.
I was doing it purposely, Carl.
Yeah, sure.
Well, no, she's technically right. Chris June. And I both were born in 1994, not 96.
Well, I knew it was close to
hey,
that.
Hey, June, did I say Curtis or did I say Chris?
I'm calling from Wisconsin.
Let her be.
Okay.
We're glad you called in. We're excited to play the game
and I'm
with
a
you.
Chicago transplant. Grew up in Chicago.
See, Chicago's so, very own.
So, wow, very
and
good.
And I just listen all the time. It's my connection back to Chicago with WGN, and I love you too.
Oh,
thank
you.
We just sit and argue
Roger,
for 3 hours.
Roger's a transplant too. He's had all his hair transplanted.
And Roger's been around for. A while.
Yeah, I have.
You should see this, these pictures of him with this mustache. I'm going to start calling him Roger Mustache.
Well, actually,
now
my,
for the news with Roger Mustache.
My nickname in college was Stash.
Well, that's see? Surprising.
Yeah.
Anyways, we are going to play a little Crack the Quote. The movie is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. My goal is to mess Carl up because he's gotten 2 right and 3 would be a travesty. So let's see what we can do here. Okay, June?
Okay.
All right. Number 1, sometimes a little brain damage can help. Number 2, technically speaking, the procedure is brain damage. Number 3, his brain damage actually washed away his brain.
Hmm.
Those are the 3 options. We're going to let June pick first.
Couldn't I get something easy like Ben-Hur?
So sorry.
Or Gone with the Wind.
My goal is to, you know, beat Carl on this one.
This
so
is challenging.
It is challenging. I'll read him one more time. Listen up, Roger. Number 1.
Can I get some help from Roger?
No. Number 1.
I can't?
No, he won't help you. Number 1. Sometimes a little brain damage can help. Number 2, technically speaking, the procedure is brain damage. Number 3, his brain damage actually washed away his brain.
2 and 3 have so many more words. I'm choosing number 1.
You got it. Number 1. Carl.
Number 2.
Number 2. Roger. Well,
this is a Jim Carrey vehicle.
It's a 1, 2, or 3, Roger.
You know what? I'm going with number 1.
You do that.
Yeah.
Let's
Roger.
All right. We've got 2 number 1s and a number 2. Let's hear it.
Technically speaking, oh. The procedure is brain.
Oh my gosh, Carl got it.
Oh.
It's 3 out of 3. I told you, June. Whatever Roger says, it's not that one.
Wait a minute.
So you were so close. 2, 1, 3. It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
You are a winner. You have won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4 CD
great.
Set. It is hosted by Stacey Keach, contains some of the biggest Hollywood stars. You will love it. It's almost on its way to you right now.
I can hardly wait. I'm so excited.
Oh, so happy to send
never
it to you.
I never thought I'd get through from Wisconsin.
Oh, we're so happy
June,
you made it through.
You know what? You're almost as excited as I am that I got all 3 right tonight.
That's a
hey,
big
Carl,
deal for you. It's
you,
a it's a first.
Roll,
man, I am the bomb.
You are.
It's probably because Lisa came back and you're just...
Yeah, it's never the same. It's never the same without Lisa.
Well, that's
we
true.
Love
different
Lisa.
Is true.
Well, June, you're a big winner. Thank you so much.
And Roger, you keep working at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Not your strong suit.
Well, thank you, June. It is time now for Nick Carter, Master Detective. This was one of the longest running radio detective series. of all time. Started in 1943, lasted all the way to 1955. And throughout every episode, Nick Carter was played by the same actor, Lon Clark. Now, he had two actresses that played his assistant, Patsy Bowen. Helen Choate was the first, and then Charlotte Manson. This was a great series. It was on Mutual. It was sponsored for a time by Lennox Home Brighteners. We have a great episode for you now called The Case of the Littlest Gangster. Let's go back to May 30th, 1948 for part one now of Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Post-war old Dutch cleanser, famous for chasing dirt, presents Nick Carter, famous for chasing crime. Every week at this time, two great names are joined as new post-war old Dutch cleanser brings you one of the most resourceful and daring characters in all detective fiction, Nick Carter, Master Detective.
But, Nick, there's no way of telling which boy did it. They were all shooting at once.
That's the point, Patsy. They were all in on it. And legally, they're all guilty.
Oh, no, Nick, not Bubs. Maybe the others, but...
Patsy, I'm afraid the law won't make any distinction in his case.
You mean that if one of the others fired that shot and Bubs didn't even know it, he's guilty?
Yes. Technically, he's guilty of murder at the age of 12.
Now, The Case of the Littlest Gangster. Today's adventure starring Lon Clark as Nick Carter. Brought to you by new post-war old Dutch cleanser. A flashy cream-colored convertible is parked along a dark street in the poorer section of the city, with two small figures crouched in the front seat, talking in whispers.
Bubs, will you quit chewing that bubble gum in my ear and hand me that piece of wire?
Okay, Tim, but do you think we ought to?
I will be driving this hack away in a minute. You seen me wire past the ignition in a car before this.
Yeah, but only so we could go for a ride. We never stole one before.
We gotta start sometime.
But supposing they can't...
Okay, punk, come out of there.
I wasn't doing nothing, mister.
Trying to heist my car, huh? Why, I ought to...
Oh, you leave him go. Turn him loose, you...
Who do you think you're kicking, you little squirt?
Oh, Graham Bubs.
I'll learn you to fool with Moxie Reed.
Gee... You ain't Moxie Reed.
Ah, so you heard of me, huh?
You let him go.
Quit kicking at him, Bubs. This is Moxie Reed. He's big-time stuff.
Yeah. I guess you do know about me.
Honest, Moxie, we'd have never touched this crate if we'd have known it was yours.
Okay, okay. So don't let it happen again.
You ain't calling the cops?
Being the cops ain't very friendly. But you two better grow up before you try lifting another car.
But, Moxie... We gotta pull something big.
Yeah, how come?
We got a gang, see? The East Side Scorpions. And we made a club room in an old empty house on Porter Street.
And the place caught on fire from a cigarette or something, and it burned.
It's just an old dump. But old lady Taltman, the lady across the street, she owns the joint, see? And she says if we don't pay $200 for the damage, she's gonna have us all put in reform school.
How'd she know it was your gang that started the fire?
Oh, old Mr. Riley seen us coming out of the joint. He lives across the street, too, right next door to her, and he squealed on us.
Who'd you say squealed?
Old man Riley. He used to be a cop till he got too old.
Is that so?
Yeah. Now all he does is sit out on his front steps every night and spy on people.
So you're gonna let a dame shake you down for 2 centuries, eh?
There ain't no way to stop her, Moxie. That's why we figured on swiping a car, to get the dough.
If it was my gang, I'd throw a scare into her so she wouldn't dare go to the cops.
What would you do, Moxie?
I'd get me a rod, that's what. I'd make sure the other guys in my gang had them, too.
A gun?
Yes, you, huh?
Nah, don't scare us. We've been wanting a heater for a long time. Ain't we, Bubs?
Yeah. Sure, Tim.
Look, if you kids really want to know how to handle this old dame, look me up in Mike Reffer's pool room someday. After you get yourself some guns.
The reason I came to see you, Mr. Carter, is that my Bubs isn't really a bad boy. You know that.
Of course, Mrs. Harris. No boy is naturally bad.
I remember when Bubs used to belong to the Downtown Boys Club. He was about 10 years old then, and the bubblegum champion of the block.
Well, that's why they started calling him Bubs, isn't it?
Uh-huh. He was an awfully cute youngster.
He still is, Miss Thorne. But there isn't any boys' club where we live now, so... Well, he's got himself mixed up with this gang.
A gang? He's only about 12, isn't he?
Yeah, but the others are all older. If something doesn't happen, Bubs will turn out to be just as bad as the rest of them.
Oh, maybe you're exaggerating, Mrs. Harris. They surely didn't start that fire on purpose.
Well, no, but where we lived before, Bubs wouldn't have dreamed of breaking into an empty building. And already they got another place for the gang to meet. Deserted warehouse over by the waterfront somewhere.
Not having any place where they're allowed to meet and to play that starts a lot of boys breaking the law.
Oh, it's that Kim Newton that's the worst. Bub thinks he's got to be just as tough as Tim is. And that boy's bad all the way through.
How old is Tim?
Oh, 15.
He can't be a confirmed criminal at that age.
Well, he almost is. Now Bub's is another hero he keeps talking about. A gangster named Moxie Reed.
Moxie Reed? That is bad.
What am I going to do, Mr. Carter? If somebody don't raise $200 to pay for the damage to that house, Mrs. Talbot's going to have them all arrested.
I'll talk to her, Mrs. Harris. And don't you worry. We'll get Bob straightened out. Only glad you came to me before he got into any real trouble.
Right. How's that for a break, Mike? You're so uptight.
Oh, yeah? Well, watch me put that one ball in the corner pocket.
Hey, Moxie.
Hiya, Tim. Hiya, Bubs. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Reed. Hey, we got them guns you told
us. Easy, kids. Will you at the back room, Mike?
Yeah, sure. Go right ahead.
This way, kids. You guys work fast, I'll say that.
We had to. Old Lady Tellman only gave us a week to raise the dough.
One inside. Sit down.
Moxie, you said you'd tell us what to do next.
I was just kidding. Forget it.
But you promised.
So what? Maybe you'd louse up the deal and squawk to the cops that I told you what to do.
We ain't no squealers.
No. We didn't even tell the rest of the gang. They all think it's Tim's idea.
We got the guns, 6 of them.
Yeah. We busted into a shooting gallery after they closed up last night.
What are they, 22 rifles?
Yeah. And we only done it because you said you'd tell us what to do next.
Well... If it was me...
Yeah?
I'd pick me up a car along about 8 o'clock tonight and drive by that old dame's house with a few of my gang.
And shoot her?
No. I'd throw enough lead through her front window so she'd be scared to ever open her trap about me again.
Sure, I get it. But, Tim, what if she gets hurt?
Quit beefing, will you? Nobody's gonna get hurt.
But maybe she
will. We'll do it, Moxie. Just like you said. And we'll do it tonight.
Mrs. Tellman, if you'll give the boys enough time to earn the money to pay for the damage to your building, I'll personally guarantee that you get every cent.
And if you had them sent away to reform school, you won't be able to collect anything.
It is not the money only, Mr. Carter. But someone has got to do something to break up these kid gangs. They're terrible.
I'm trying to do something. Think I can get a boys' club started in this neighborhood? And then
believe me, it will do no good, Mr. Carter. These kids is mean. They smash windows. They steal automobiles.
Mrs. Tellman, please, hold off a few weeks before having them arrested. It's the only way you can be sure of getting your money.
Yes, Mrs. Tellman, please do that.
All right. But if they step out of line just one more time, I send every last one of those kids to the reform school.
Now, wait till I twist these wires together. We'll see if she starts.
Tim, maybe if we went to old Lady Tellman and...
Shut up. I'm going to try it now. She works.
Where are we going to pick up the other guys?
At the warehouse.
Are there guns there, too?
Yeah, and enough bullets to give old Lady Tellman the scare of her life.
Good night, Mrs. Tellman.
Good night, Mr. Carter. Good night, Mrs. Bourne.
Good night.
Oh, how are you tonight, Mr. Riley?
Oh, fine, thanks. Just getting the breath of air like always.
Well, I think we've put in a good day's work, Nick.
I do, too, but I still want to talk to Bubs.
It's almost 8 o'clock. He ought to be home by now.
All right, let's go by there and see.
Nick, look at that car racing up the street. Isn't that Bubs leaning out the front window?
Yeah, that's Bubs, all right. Hey, he's got a rifle. Look out.
Yeah.
Good grief. Come on, Patsy. Oh,
they were shooting at Mrs. Tellman's house.
Mrs. Tellman. Mrs. Tellman. It's Nick Carter. Are you all right? Mrs. Tellman.
I'm coming. Oh, they tried to kill me. Look at my windows. Look at the holes in my front door.
I'm thankful that none of the bullets hit you. I was afraid that maybe... Yes, what's the matter?
If she's all right, you better come down here quick.
Why?
There's a man on the steps next door. He must have been hit by a stray bullet. I think he's dead.
Only a few steps beyond the bullet-riddled front door of Mrs. Tellman's home lies the body of the man who had informed on the juvenile gang, ex-police officer Riley. Nick is examining the body of James Riley, lying dead on the steps of his home, following a hail of bullets intended to frighten his neighbor, Mrs. Tellman.
All right, keep back, everybody, please. The police will be here in a minute.
Poor Mr. Riley, such a nice man. Those murderers, those hoodlums. Did you see that, Mr. Carter? Do you know who it was?
I'm afraid it was the boys who set fire to your building, Mrs. Tellman.
Oh.
We recognized one of them just before the shooting.
Those little devils. I said they were no good. They should get the electric chair.
Oh, but Mrs. Tellman.
They're murderers. When they could not kill me, they should pour me the right.
Oh, I don't believe they did that on purpose.
I know they did. They was mad at him than they was at me. He's the one told me they started the fire.
Is that so? Didn't know that.
Oh, it must have been an accident. They were shooting at the front of your house and one bullet went astray.
No, Patsy, I don't think it was accidental.
Oh, but
the bullet that killed him struck the center of his forehead and came out just behind the right ear. Riley was sitting at the top of this flight of stairs.
What difference does that make?
The difference between an accident and murder.
But even if you're right, how can you ever find out which of the boys did it? They were all shooting at once.
That's just the trouble, Patsy. When one of a group commits murder while they're all engaged in a crime, they're all equally guilty.
Oh, no, Nick. You don't mean Bubs. Not that baby.
Oh, thank goodness the cops are gone.
Come on, Patsy. Help me look for that bullet. The only chance we have to prove exactly who killed Mr. Riley.
That's the first portion of Nick Carter, Master Detective. More after these words. All right, should we go to Roger Stash himself for the news, Lisa?
I don't know who you might be referring to.
All right, well, let's do that. Let's go to the 1:30 news with Roger Stash.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Inside Edition's Deborah Norville checks in with her old friend Steve Cochran on Monday at 9:10 a.m. to talk about if your pet will protect you and a crazy new invention called Flex Glue.
Flex Glue?
Right.
Huh.
You know about that?
Yeah. You used it one time to try to glue my lips together.
Exactly.
So I remember that.
So Steve is going to be talking about that Monday morning about when I did that. That's what he's going to be talking about. Yep.
Okay, well, you want to hear the conclusion to Nick Carter, Master Detective?
Yes, sir.
Let's go back now to a broadcast date of May 30th, 1948, for the conclusion to the case of the littlest gangster on Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Right in the corner pocket, like I said.
Okay. So now I owe you $4.
Moxie, you gotta help me out, Moxie. The cops seen us and they...
Shut up, you kids. I'm in the back room. Now, what do you mean a cop seen you?
When we was ditching the car, we let the other guys out first. And then just as we was...
What'd you do with the guns?
They guessed the cops got them. We left them in the car.
Why, you idiots.
Tim says we gotta run away or they'll get us, sure.
Yeah, but we dastn't make a break for a few days.
If you're hot, what are you coming to me for? I got no place to put you.
We already got a place. We can hide out in our club room at the old warehouse.
You'll take us there in your car, won't you, Moxie? If we go out on the street, they'll get us, sure.
You're gonna run away in a few days, huh?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that ain't a bad idea.
Will you take us to the warehouse, Moxie? Will you?
Okay, kids. I'll do it.
Gee, you're a real pal, Moxie. You're swell.
And
Any news, Matty?
Yeah, ballistics is making the tests now, Nick.
Well, what test is that, Sergeant?
They're checking the kid's rifles against the bullet that killed Riley to see which one fired that particular shot.
Well, how will that help?
Well, you see, Pastor, every one of the rifles is covered with fingerprints.
Uh-huh.
And when we know which gun killed Riley, we'll know which kid did it.
No sign of Tim and Bubs yet, huh?
No, Nick, but we rounded up the other four that was in the car, and we'll have them, too, before long.
I still say it was an accident, a stray bullet.
Look, Patsy, it don't make no difference. They were committing a crime when it happened, so that makes it murder.
Matty, I don't go along with that stray bullet theory.
Well, you're probably right, Nick. And if Riley was killed deliberately, I'll bet Tim Newton was the one that did it.
Well, why Tim, Sergeant?
I've been told he was plenty sore at Riley for telling the old lady the boys started that fire in the building of hers across the street.
Well, I'm not surprised at that.
Another reason I think Tim did it is because the other boys all said that shooting up Mrs. Tillman's home was his idea.
I wonder if it was, Matty.
You think the kids are lying?
No. But Bubs' mother said he and Tim had been hanging around Moxie Reed lately.
Hey, maybe you got something there, Nick. Moxie's just the kind of a guy to put ideas like that in the kid's mind.
Say, who is this Moxie Reed anyway?
Patsy, a few years ago, he wasn't much different from Tim Newton.
Hmm?
But he's developed into a first-class rat, a cheap gangster.
Now, wait a minute. I wouldn't say cheap, Nick. He's getting plenty of dough from somewhere, or he wouldn't be able to run around in that big cream-colored convertible he's got.
And you can't get anything on him, huh?
No, not lately.
Huh?
You know, about 7 years ago, we tagged him for a stick-up over on the... Hey, that's funny.
Hmm?
Well, talk about coincidences.
Well, what's funny, Sergeant?
The guy that hung that rap on Moxie was Riley, the man who was killed.
What?
Yeah, he used to be a cop before he retired.
You say Riley was the one who arrested Moxie Reed?
Sure, it was his testimony that sent Moxie up.
That's what I've been looking for, Matty. Somebody who had reason to hate Riley. Somebody beside the kids.
Hey, that's an idea, Nick. Moxie might have got the kids to shoot up Mrs. Tillman's home and got one of them to bump off Riley by telling him it would look like an accident and nobody could ever prove which one did it.
Yeah, it could have been that way, Matty, but...
Yeah,
I think that...
Oh, wait a minute. Homicide, Sergeant Matheson speaking. Oh, yeah? Yeah, what did you find out?
Is it the report from ballistics?
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead, Malloy. It wasn't. But it had to be. Oh, you sure you didn't make no mistake? I know, but... Okay. Yeah, thanks.
What's the matter, Matty?
You know what, Nick? None of them six guns we found in the kid's car killed Riley.
Good.
But what do you mean, good? It only proves that one of those kids knew he was going to kill Riley. That's why he took the gun away and hid it so we couldn't identify it.
You may change your mind after we talk to Tim and Bubs.
What? Well, we ought to pick them up before long. You want me to give you a ring when we find them?
No, I don't want to sit around and wait. I'm going out to look for them myself.
Okay.
In the meantime, I suggest you have some of your boys bring in Moxie Reed.
Club room's right at the top of these stairs, Moxie.
You sure nobody will come looking around in here?
Why, this old warehouse ain't been used for years. They condemned it or something.
Where's the room you kids are going to hide out in?
It's this door. We got a padlock on it, so if anybody ever did come in here, they wouldn't swipe any of our stuff.
You got the key, Tim?
Sure, I got it right here. Moxie, you've been a great guy, and we ain't ever going to forget it.
Yeah, it was just like you belong to our gang.
Sure. Even coming down there to help us out.
Down where?
To old Lady Tillman's house.
What are you talking about?
And you wasn't even going to tell us. We wouldn't have known what a swell pal you are if Bubs hadn't have looked up and seen you.
It was swell seeing you standing in that window across the street pumping lead into the old lady's front door just like we was.
Well, you saw me there, did you?
Yeah. We didn't tell the other guys.
That's good. I'll get in that room.
Come on, Bubs.
Tim, I think I changed my mind.
Huh?
If I was to run away, well, it'd just about kill my mom. I'd rather go to the reform school.
Are you nuts? Get inside there.
I can't. I'm going back home.
You're going in that room now.
Hey, what's the idea of hitting a little kid like
that?
That
goes for you too, stupid. Get in there.
Oh! Marcy!
Moxie, don't lock the door, please.
You let us out of here. Open this door.
So long, punks. Been nice knowing you.
Nick, we've been driving along the waterfront for almost an hour. Isn't it time to give up and go home?
Yeah, I guess so, Patsy. Bob's mother said the boys had a club room in some deserted warehouse in this district. Seemed the logical place for them to hide out.
Yeah, but it's so dark down here now, you can't even tell which ones are deserted.
I was hoping we'd find them on the street. This is where they came, though. It looks as though they got here first.
We can come back again in the morning.
Hey, Patsy.
Hmm?
Look at that car up ahead.
Why, it's a big cream-colored convertible, like the one Sergeant Matheson said Moxie Reed owned.
If I'm not mistaken, that's Moxie getting ready to drive off.
Are you sure?
No, but I'm going to cut in ahead of him and find out.
Hey, what's the big idea?
Stay right where you are, Moxie. Thought I recognized you.
What do you want to do, give me a medal?
No, just want to have a little talk with you, if you don't mind.
Lock us in here for, Tim. I want to go home.
Ah, quit blubbering, will you? Go on, chew your bubble gum.
I lost it someplace.
Okay, so quit crying anyway. I ain't gonna let nothing happen to you. There'll be plenty of people working around this neighborhood in the morning. If we yell loud enough, somebody will come and let us out.
I want to get out now.
Well, you can't. We could yell our lungs out and nobody'd hear us, so shut up.
Tim. Tim, do you smell something?
Huh? Hey, I think I do. It smells like smoke.
He did smoke.
Yeah, and it's stronger over here by the door. Holy cow, the building must be on fire.
What are we gonna do? We gotta get out.
We can't. The door's locked.
Help!
Let us
Help!
Out! Somebody!
Fire!
Get us out of here. We'll be burned up.
Help!
Hoping against hope that someone will hear them, the two boys pound helplessly against the heavy locked door. Now for the conclusion of the case of the littlest gangster. Today's adventure with Nick Carter, brought to you by new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. Unaware that Tim and Bubs are locked in a burning warehouse in the deserted waterfront district, Patsy listens as Nick questions Moxie Reed.
I want to know where those two kids are, Reed.
I don't know what kids you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. Tim Newton and Bubs Harris.
I ain't seen them in 2 or 3 days.
Hey, just a minute, Moxie. You chew gum?
No, and I don't go for all day suckers either.
Well, there's a wad of chewing gum stuck to your trousers leg. And from the color, I'd say it was bubble gum.
Does that mean something, Nick?
Bubs Harris got his nickname because he's always chewing bubble gum.
What?
I'll bet this was some of his. See, it hasn't even begun to dry out yet.
Oh, lots of kids chew bubble gum. I might have picked it up any place.
But when we find you up here, the neighborhood where we expect you to find Bubs and Tim, I think that gum means a whole lot.
Nick, look. Across the street, those windows.
The warehouse is on fire, Patsy.
Yeah.
You better turn an alarm. There's a box right in front of the warehouse.
Right, Nick. I'll get it.
Look, Carter, I got a date. I've got to...
What's your hurry?
I'm getting out of here. I mean, I got to go up and...
You wouldn't know anything about that fire, would you?
No. Watch yourself. I'm going to start a...
You're not going anywhere, Moxie. You're staying here till I find out what's making you so jittery all of a sudden.
Why, you, I'll...
Oh, you want to play, do you? Well, how do you like that? Out cold. It swung harder than I thought.
Nick! Oh, Nick!
Yes, what is it, Patsy?
Just as I turned the alarm, Nick, I thought I heard someone in the building. Listen.
I bet that's the boys.
Oh, you've got to save them, Nick.
Here, take my handcuffs.
Yeah.
Fasten Moxie to the steering wheel of the car.
Uh-huh.
I'm going after those boys before they burn to death.
Hey, Tim! Tim! Bubs, where are you?
In here, this door.
It's locked. Can you open it?
No, it's a padlock.
All right, stand out of the way. I'm going to try to break it down.
I think it gave a little. Try it again.
All right.
Hey, I was afraid nobody'd come and...
Never mind, never mind. Where's Bubs?
Over there on the floor. He passed out from a smoke.
Okay, I'll carry him. Come on.
Nick, look. The flames are coming up the stairs. We can't get out that way.
Is there another way out of here, Tim?
There's some windows at the back. Maybe we can jump.
Quick, show me the way. I'll follow with Bubs. There's no time to lose.
How's your ankle, Nick?
Oh, you stop worrying, Patsy. It's all right.
Well, I guess you were lucky at that to get off with only a sprained ankle after jumping out of a second-story window.
Well, if it wasn't for that pile of trash I landed on, it might have been worse.
Yeah.
And if Bubs hadn't come to before we jumped, it would have been very much worse.
Mm, I'm glad neither of the kids was hurt. You know yet what's going to happen to them?
Well, I think I'll be able to get them a suspended sentence. Depending on their future good behavior, of course.
Well, now that the boys' club is a certainty, their behavior shouldn't be any problem.
Well, I think they've learned their lesson. The cinch, they'll never admire gangsters again, after the way Moxie treated them.
Uh-huh. You know, you never did tell me how you figured out that Moxie killed Mr. Riley.
I didn't know it was Moxie. But I was pretty sure Riley hadn't been shot by one of the boys in that car.
Why?
Because anyone shooting from a car wouldn't have had the gun more than 5 feet above street level.
Mm-hmm.
And Riley was sitting on the top step, his head at least 8 feet above street level.
Well? Well,
the bullet went into the center of his forehead and came out behind his right ear, traveling a downward course.
I see. If it had been fired from the car, the bullet would have traveled upward.
Right. That's why I thought the bullet might have come from the second or third story of that empty building across the street.
It did, too. That's where Bub saw Moxie.
Yes, but the boys thought he was helping them frighten Mrs. Tillman. They didn't even know Riley had been shot until I told them.
So that's why Moxie tried to kill the boys by setting that warehouse on fire, because he knew they'd seen him.
Yeah. See, Moxie had hated Riley ever since Riley sent him up to the penitentiary for that stick-up 7 years ago.
Yeah?
And when the boys told him of their trouble with a woman who lived next door, and also that Riley sat on the front steps of his house every night, well, it looked like a perfect setup for murder.
Well, I still don't see how you could ever have proved it, though, if Moxie hadn't confessed.
Well, we were lucky to get the proof first, and he confessed later. Wasn't hard once we knew what to look for. We found the dealer from whom Moxie bought a .22 rifle exactly like the one he knew the boys were going to use. And later, we found the gun itself.
So it wasn't such a perfect setup after all.
Well, not for murder, but as far as Moxie was concerned, it turned out to be a perfect setup for the electric chair.
Carter, Master Detective, is presented each week at this time by the Cudahy Packing Company. It is produced and directed by Jock McGregor and is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. Charlotte Manson is featured as Patsy. Ed Latimer plays Matty. Today's script was written by Jim Parsons. Original music is played by Henry Silverne. This program is fictional, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This is Michael Fitzmaurice saying, when minutes count, use new post-war Old Dutch cleanser. This is the network for the Indianapolis Speedway race tomorrow, the Mutual Broadcasting System.
I am positive, Lisa.
Yes.
That was in Oregon.
Do you want to make it into Nick's inappropriate reel again this week? Is that your goal?
I'm positive that was in Oregon.
I'm not going to respond because I don't want to be a part of the
Hammond, Oregon.
I don't want to be a part of that.
All right. So Nick Carter,
keep it all clean
here. Master Detective, May 30th, 1948, The Case of the Littlest Gangster with Lon Clark and Roger Stash. Those were the two actors in that podcast.
Still getting royalties for that one.
Good
Let's
job.
Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa Wolf, when we come back here tonight at 11 p.m.,
yes.
What, pray tell, are we playing?
We're going to play some classic radio. Can you imagine that?
No.
Yeah, we actually are. We're going to play three shows. We've got The Adventures of Ellery Queen. We have Suspense, which we play a lot of. And we have This Is Your FBI.
Wow, good lineup.
I know.
We have that's a good detective.
Yep.
Then a mystery. And then sort of a government detective show.
Yeah, there's a lot of hubbub going on here.
Wow.
Dave Player walked in, and with him is some tumultuous moments here. But I am
right
thrilled to hear about your interview with Gene Simmons.
Good morning.
A Kiss fan.
Oh, cool.
And
awesome.
I've seen
awesome.
Them, and I know their music, and it kind of brings me a blast to the past from, you know, the 80s when they were
Want to measure
Gene
Simmons' tongue and then Lisa's tongue.
I swear I haven't.
Wow.
No,
I bet
he's
you
not
hers
kidding.
Is longer.
Now, how
show him. Show
them. There's got to be a joke
Lisa,
in here somewhere,
it.
Carl.
No, no,
I feel like there's going to be a camera.
She does it all the time. She sticks it out all
if
the time.
If I do it and there's just a camera, is this going to live
right
into
there.
Perpetuity?
Show.
Right there. Go ahead.
Let's get Dave's reaction.
Yes.
Let's get Dave's reaction.
Smile.
Here we go.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow. See, that was a big reaction right there.
I so hope this doesn't end up on the
internet.
Screen
capture that. Yeah, that's on delay.
That's the female Gene Simmons.
Yeah,
right?
I feel a kindred spirit with him. You should let him know.
Aren't they the most theatrically fabulous shows?
That's probably it.
Right?
I was mesmerized.
Did you see
them? I saw them in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I was mesmerized. I learned all of the music and all of the words prior to going to the show. So I went. I would really appreciate it. And boy, did I. Unforgettable show.
In makeup and everything,
The whole deal.
Yeah.
Yep, unforgettable.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Didn't they perform on maybe American Idol or The Voice or one of those shows recently?
They could have.
They performed on American Idol.
I think it was American a couple years ago, maybe 2 years
ago-ish.
Okay,
not the new one. Okay.
No, the new one is not so good.
That's cool.
But the old one's the way it should be.
Yeah, he's coming to the Arcata Theater, but he's doing a one-man show. So it's him and his band, but they're going to do the
Does
hits.
He still dress up with the makeup?
No,
and
he
everything?
Won't for this show. He
then
won't for this show.
I'm sorry, it's all over for me.
But I mean, he's but he's bigger than life himself.
How old is he?
Oh, he's 65.
I was going to say mid 60s, probably.
Yeah. But he's got his own band. But he's going to do his hits. But then he said doing this tour, because he's going back on tour with Kiss in July, and I think they're going to be overseas for that, that they're able to do a lot of more B-side hits and some of the solo stuff that he's done. All of them have done solo stuff over the years. So.
I'm a huge fan.
Cool.
Just want you to
Tune
know.
In. Tune
can't,
in.
I can't wait.
After if Roger will ever get done with the news at 2:30, I mean,
Roger's going to speak really, really quickly.
He's always,
done.
He's always
he has
late.
A lot to say.
Always behind
I think it's the mustache that gets in the
it
way.
It could be.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when the mustache wax wears out, it just kind of falls in my lips.
Is
and
that
I can't
what it
talk.
Is? Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
That's it's a good thing he's a news guy.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a good job for him.
So besides Gene Simmons, who else is on the show?
That's it.
Great. Love him.
We almost have Gene for an hour. I mean, so we had a good conversation with him. We did pre-tape the conversation earlier in the week because Gene didn't
want
to get up.
He did not want to get up.
You know what? I don't blame him.
No. But you'll really enjoy this conversation. And then... talking about some of the retailers that are going away in droves like Carson's, Perry Scott, excuse me, and Toys R Us,
right?
I've read a lot about this because that's in my industry what I do during the week, and everyone is talking about no, this isn't like the retail is just dying. It's a revival. It's a reinvention of sorts because these were the chains that just weren't viable, or they were just not run properly, or whatever. So it's a survival of the fittest in all of this. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But then Craig Lacassiato from craigslawchicago.com. Have you ever seen this website?
What is it called?
craigslawchicago.com.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
Craig's
Law Chicago.
Law.
Lost. L-O-S-T, Chicago.
No, I've never heard of that.
So you might have gotten links to it and not realized what the website is, but this guy has a phenomenal site, pictures and stuff about every...
Oh, Lost.
Yeah, Lost. Every restaurant, every department store, every amusement park you ever...
That's gone. Oh, that is great.
It's fabulous. So, on the retail side...
Polk Brothers and Venture.
Zaire. But Kroc and Brentano's,
B-Dog,
Jeans West, Chess
look,
King.
Look, most of the bookstores are gone
Goldblatt's, Weebolt's, all these Sam Goody,
Woolworths.
Sound Warehouse, Rose Records. I mean, he's got pictures of
great.
Everything.
And Turnstile.
Turnstile
was great.
Which, what was, what?
There was Zaire and there was Turnstile.
Community Venture. Home Center, Venture. But who?
Ben Franklin. Are they still around?
Ben Franklin still has some stores that...
Yeah, but I mean, they were big at one point.
Turnstile.
Polk Brothers.
Do you know what Turnstile was or where it spun off of? It was Jewel Osco's apparel chain.
Wow.
It was Jewel.
Is he like a true historian?
Yeah, I mean, he does an amazing job. This website is great. It's craigslawchicago.com.
Nice.
So we're going to have him on, and we always get tons of texts and callers when we do stuff like that.
There's
so
probably a whole section there for Lisa's mind.
You just, again, unplug that right from your
side. Wow, look at what time it is.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. My gosh. Is it 2:02 already, Roger? That's amazing. All right. What do you guys got coming up tonight?
Yeah, we've got, we're going to play classic radio.
Stop
what do you
yeah,
think of that?
Come on. I think we're just going to do something different and play some classic
radio. Yeah. Okay. Ellery Queen Suspense, and This Is Your FBI.
Love that.